Good Thursday afternoon and welcome into Grant and Danny. We are live on 106.7 The Fan all over the district. You can listen to us wherever you go all day long on the Odyssey app, and you can watch us on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page. Got an excellent show planned for you, including tickets to see Disturbed we're giving out at 4 o'clock ahead of the Beltway Blitz, and our buddy Danny Cannell covers college football as well as anybody, stopping by to break down the college season, the Heisman race, and the rookie quarterbacks in the NFL he covered over the years who are shining this year, including Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels, who Danny will be, hopefully, on the field together at Northwest Stadium on Sunday. Daniels' health still pending.
Yeah, that's the key question here. It looks like early portion of practice, where media is available. No Jaden Daniels on the field. Seen multiple of the reporters tweeting that out. So, you know, no QB work today. Adam Schefter tweeted in response to a John Keim tweet. That's where we are. We're tweeting and quote tweeting and then quoting the quote tweets to pass the information on to you that the team plans to try to practice Jaden Daniels tomorrow. I'm not sure what he's basing that on. I don't know who that's per. I don't know. He didn't say per sources or per communication, but that's just what we're going off right now.
I got to imagine, well, it's one of two things. Either he's reporting that, but if he reported that, I would think he would source it or he would do it differently than just the quote tweet and then adding his own color. Mm-hmm. It just looks like he's providing information without a report there. But maybe this is him sticking to what Dan Quinn said on Monday. He never definitively said that Jaden Daniels would practice on Friday, but he said as the week went on, they would try to get him to do more and more. He was on the field today wearing a helmet during practice, as you said, not participating or doing anything while the media was there. But I didn't take that as some big report like he had gotten some news from inside the building as much as him saying they are hoping that he can practice on Friday. Do you think he needs to practice to play in the game on Sunday? Is there a path at all to zero practice time through Friday, walk through Saturday, he's out on the field walking around, and then he tests out pregame at Northwest Stadium, and he actually plays in the 425 kick?
I suppose that's a pretty narrow tightrope to walk, wouldn't you think? Right? I mean, it's possible. I mean, if this is a 10-year veteran, you know, if you got a Mahomes or a Rodgers or somebody that's done this for a long time, you go, okay, you're familiar with this offense intimately. You don't need every rep because this is all second nature to you. Daniels is obviously very far advanced for his age and, you know, experience level, et cetera. But to me, this is if you're not healthy enough to do all the things during the week, I don't know. I'd be more hesitant than that. But there is a path, I suppose.
What is the point of pushing it is what I would ask. Rhetorically, I guess. But if you're in your car, answer along with me here. They are 5-2 and well ahead of schedule. Worst case scenario, let's say Mariota's terrible. They get blown out at home. They're 5-3, and they've got three division games coming up in a four-game sequence after the Bears tilt. Why push it? You got a kid quarterback who's lighting it up, who you're trying to be extra careful with, because if he comes back a little bit early and it gets worse or he gets further dinged, maybe now you're missing two or three or four games. And you're a team that is essentially playing a house money football game, way ahead of schedule right now in your first year of this regime. So I just don't think I would have an aggressive nature here. Would it be awesome to see Daniels and Williams on the field together? Of course. CBS flexed this game for two reasons and two reasons only. Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and that storyline. Everybody wants to see them on the field, and everybody wants to see not only them compete, but I think Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury in this offense go up against an elite defense for the first time, which they'd be doing. They have not played a top five defense. They have not had to move the ball and score the points that they have all year long against a defense of this caliber. So I'd be really excited for that. I'll be bummed if and when it doesn't happen. But at the same time, wanting something really badly is not a reason to do it. You know what I mean? You got kids. My kids all the time are like, you know how fun it would be? You know how amazing it'd be? Let me go. Let me do this. Nah, we can't do that. Sorry, buddy. Because I got to be the adult in the room and say, you're right, you would have fun. There would be a sugar high there. You would have a blast with your buddies. We'd pay for it tomorrow when you're not ready for your game. Or we'd pay for it in 2 days when you're out of your routine and your sleep schedule. I just think they've got to decide as they get closer, is he 100% or not? If the answer is no, he's not playing. Is he able to execute every play that he's been asked to all season long already? Because the answer is no, then he's not playing. I can't have him doing anything to avoid getting hit in the way of what plays he's running, how he's playing. It's just not worth it to me. I don't need this game that badly. It's not like it's a Week 18 division title game or a playoff game. If it was a playoff game, I'll bet you he'd play, by the way. But it's not. Mm. So I'm 50-50. I really have no idea. I thought after Dan Quinn spoke on Monday he was going to play. But as we get closer, I keep asking myself, what's the point, really? Like, why is it such a big deal that he plays if he's not going to be back to a point where it's like it never happened? Then what are we pushing it for?
Yeah, the aggressive timetable only makes sense if Daniels is A-okay. You know what I mean? Like, that's it, any quarterback at this point, right? I mean, you said it. There's some hay in the barn, number one, in terms of your 5-2 record. You're in a good spot. So if you're 5-3, the world is not falling. But even if it was, this is rookie year quarterback stuff for me. And so I'm even more cautious in that regard, where I'm going, if I have to not play him for, and I'm not saying this is the case, but if I have to not play him for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, the whole point is his long-term excellence for me. So go back to Strasburg shutdown time, right? Where the pundits from around the country or the John Feinsteins of the world wouldn't let it go. How could you do it? How could you do it? Because I'd like to have him here for 15 years. That's the answer. This run is awesome. I'll have fun. I wish he was pitching, but all they did is the best medical practice. That's what I'm looking for here. I apply that same logic all the time. I don't just part-time it when it's convenient or a team narrative. I'm going, the most important thing here is I have a quarterback, and I'd like him to be here, and I'd like to be relevant in the NFL. Not a punchline, not a joke, not somebody that everybody goes, thank God we're playing Washington this week so we can get right. Those days are over. I'm going to do everything I can to make him sustainable. That's not rushing him back. That's not, well, we can get away with it. I don't want to maybe get away with it at all. I want him here signing multiple extensions, and I want my kids and I want their kids to talk about Jaden Daniels the way my dad talks about Sonny Jurgensen and you know, Theismann and company. That's what I want. So sorry about this week. I'll sacrifice that at the altar of Ring of Fame for Jaden Daniels. And that's my only thought.
You said you're thinking about having him around for 15 years.
Yeah.
What about having him around for 20 years?
That'd be cool.
That's how long Alex Ovechkin has been in D.C. The Washington Capitals sharpshooter, who is the all-time leader in NHL history in both shots on goal and power play goals, is chasing down Wayne Gretzky. And after last night, he has 39 goals from tying Gretzky, 40 goals from breaking the all-time scoring record, an empty netter last evening for Ovi as the Caps got a fifth straight win in six games to start the year. They have become one of the best offensive teams in the NHL out of the chute here in 2024.
Strome holding it along the far wing. Ovechkin's on the ice here, chasing after it. Will he get there for a chance? He might. A backhander! He scores! Alex Ovechkin into the empty net! And that will delight the masses here as the Capitals have a 6-3 lead. And Alex Ovechkin scoring his 50th career goal against the Philadelphia Flyers.
That's our guy John Walton, as heard right here on 106.7 The Fan last night. Caps ripping off a fifth in a row, four in regulation. They've beaten three very likely almost certain playoff teams in the stretch. And then more recently, the last two wins over the last two nights against the Philadelphia Flyers, a Metro Division rival. Two wins in 24 hours is hard to do. But they've got 26 goals from 12 different skaters in their first six games. They are a buzzsaw right now.
Ovi, 39 shy of tying a record I thought would never be tied or broken. That's incredible. A couple other notes. During one of the intermissions, I don't know if you caught this, they showed a graphic the guy's doing in between the first and second intermission. They were basically like apologizing for how bad the Flyers made the game and how ugly the aesthetic was, the TNT crew. But they showed a graphic real quick. Capitals are still plus money to make the postseason, even after this start.
Well, I mean, that's not that surprising nationally, only because, did you see the power rankings before the year came out?
Yeah.
They were 25th, mm-hmm. 27th, 23rd, 29th. There's 32 teams in the league now. I mean, a lot of people thought that they were going to be a non-playoff team coming into the year. I think most of the experts thought there was a better chance they'd be really bad than really good. I didn't really understand that because they haven't been really bad during the entire Ovechkin era, and they had more money to spend, and they could be more aggressive this offseason than they've been at any point. And for those of you that kind of track them casually, just to make the case here, what's happened is, sadly, Nicholas Backstrom – and TJ Oshie both are effectively retired. In the NHL, it's a little quirky how they do it, but they're on long-term IR. Those guys are, theoretically, I'm using air quotes, like going to continue to try to come back. It's the Steven Strasburg situation of they got a lot of money they're owed. If you retire, you don't get the money. But you can put them on LTIR. And what happens in hockey, unlike in, say, the NFL, is when that happens, you get a big portion of that money back on your salary cap. So by TJ Oshie, a hero who I miss and love, and nobody plays harder than that guy, not being available, and Nicholas Backstrom not being available on those big contracts, for the first time in years, general manager Brian McClellan in that front office, he's now been elevated to president, they were able to go out and add talent. So they did. They brought in Pierre-Luc Dubois, who's been tremendous, scored a goal last night. They brought in basically a player on every single line. Mangiapane right now is on the third line. Radish and Duhamel on the fourth line. Their new top pairing defenseman, Jacob Chychrun. Matt Roy's actually hurt, but he'd be on the second defensive pair. They've got a new goaltender who's won both of his starts, who's been really, really good, in Logan Thompson. In fact, all three of his starts
3-0 now, yeah.
At this point. So almost at every level of the ice, they made big moves, and everyone said, I don't know about that. It was kind of like the Commanders, where it was a ton of moves, and no one or two of them looked great. But when you add them all up, they're just more talented. I was talking to Tarik El-Bashir, Danny, on our Altcast on Saturday night. And I was juxtaposing the chances and the danger opportunities and the goal scoring that they had so far this year through last year. And I'm like, it's crazy how much more. And he's like, yeah, when you're more talented, that's what happens. I mean, they just have a lot more talent. And I just think people weren't sold on the moves they made. But you've talked about this a lot, and it's something on this show we've harped on for years. This is one of those cultures where when guys come here, they play the best version of their game or elevate their game. And you're kind of seeing that. It's not like these are nobodies. Mangiapane had a 30-plus goal season at one point. Duhamel has been a good hockey player. Radish, I think, has had a 20-goal season on his ledger like a couple of years ago in Chicago. These aren't nobodies. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, of course, yeah.
And so it's working right now. It's early. I'm not throwing a party yet, but I will say at this moment, they're really, really good.
Yeah, it's more certainly more fun to watch than it was the start of last year where we would notice a lot more of Ovechkin not moving around as well or scoring and from his office or doing normal things as they don't score at all and are 1-5-1 or however it was they started last year. Now everybody gets a turn to score, yeah. And it's a lot of fun. They did last night a couple different things before we move on that I go, when I see hockey teams that I know are threats and I know are terrifying to play against, like every time the puck's in their offensive zone, my defensive zone, if I'm a Caps fan, where seemingly nondescript moments – where all it takes is this one slap pass to a guy that's in front in traffic, and there's always chaos, just pucks going to net at weird angles.
Tip drill.
Like the tip drill stuff. So the Taylor Radish goal last night, I think one of the McMichael goals was similar to that. I go, that's the good stuff. That's how you score in the postseason. That's how you score in these tight games. That's what I've coveted for so long. Instead of trying to tic-tac-toe and make the perfect pass, it's those, I don't know if they're full grimy goals, but it's like grimy adjacent. Right? The kind of things that's not some gorgeous Sports Center highlight where somebody goes top shelf. It's like we're looking for ricochets. We get some ping balls or ping pong balls or ping pong pucks, so to speak. I love that.
Capitals next game in Tampa on Saturday night should be either further revealing for them because the Lightning's yet another really good team, hung 8 on the Devils on Tuesday night. They've been playing pretty well, have a win over Vegas, a good team as well. So looking forward to seeing that matchup on Saturday. Tonight, Thursday Night Football in the NFL, should be a pretty good game. Couple of former Washington offensive coordinators, highly regarded coaches here that went on to become great NFL head coaches. In the case of Kevin O'Connell and Sean McVay, Minnesota's 5-1 on the road in L.A. trying to get to 6-1. They look like not only a playoff team, but a team that could be a real pain in the butt to play in the postseason. Brian Flores' defense, one of the best in the league. Justin Jefferson, Jetta. There's nobody at the wide receiver position better. Sam Darnold started off on fire, MVP candidate. He's been very solid since. And on the LA side of things, they're trying to keep their season alive. They lose tonight. They're 2-5, and it's sell mode. Cooper Kupp gets traded. They probably blow it up.
Yeah, I've already heard some sniffing about that, right? I mean, there's some speculation that Matt Stafford might go to Minnesota. I don't know how real these rumors are,
fake.
By the way.
Yeah.
But Cooper Kupp's on the block, allegedly. But again, I have no confirmation, of course. So it could very easily happen. I mean, even though that division, by the way, Seattle's winning it at 4-3. Nobody's that good right now.
It feels like 10-7 wins that division. I think San Francisco could eventually get their footing.
They got the best chance to, right?
But Man, are they hurt.
Yeah, same record as Arizona, who beat them.
They're super banged up. They got to get really healthy really fast. Brock Purdy did not look the same this past weekend. Doing it with a little bit less around him, three interceptions. Supposedly Kyle Shanahan was at his locker while the media was in there talking to him for like 7-8 minutes while everyone's roaming around the locker room to get interviews. Things are not going well offensively for them right now. Yesterday on this show, we had Thomas Dimitroff on. He was sensational. He's a former GM, ran the Falcons, was a super aggressive general manager. In fact, we talked to him about the trade deadline, and he said, you know, I like to think I was one of the first guys of the wave of young GMs that actually did bring in aggressiveness and the want in the GM job to make trades. He said a lot of the old school guys, they didn't do it. They're conservative. But he's on that Les Snead team, you know, the Howie Roseman group that likes to make moves. It's like the guy in your fantasy league that's always offering something, always trying to call you and text you to
just
make a trade.
Just paying and probing, yep.
So I want to use that as backdrop to say this guy was uber aggressive as an executive and did some really bold things over the years. But he did work with Dan Quinn hand in hand for years. He hired Dan Quinn as the head coach in Atlanta. They worked. They were the Peters and Quinn of the Falcons for a long time. So nobody knows DQ better than him in terms of guests we're going to get on. He also worked with Peters in New England. When Peters was cutting his teeth as a scout, Dimitroff was there in that department. So he knows both of these guys. And you asked him the question about the trade deadline and what he thought they would do, what he thought they should do if he was them, what kind of things he'd be considering. And he blew both of us away with his answer. This was Dimitroff yesterday.
Look, I keep trumpeting this, and I think the Raiders fans are going to be agitated with me, but I know Dan Quinn. I know Dan Quinn loves legit pass rushers. I'm talking game-breaking pass rushers. You know where I'm going with this. To ever see a guy... A guy like Max Crosby pushing that to continue to build because, you know, they have a little bit of age on that pass rushing side too. I think that would be an ideal fit. Now, I know everyone in Detroit wants him there, and I think there are people in Atlanta that want him here, but I think the mix, Max Crosby and Dan Quinn, you don't think your city would go nuts over that?
So, a couple of things. First off, I don't even know that we need to take calls on should they go trade for Max Crosby. Because first, I'm not sure how realistic it is. And second, the answer is yes, they should. It's funny, I tweeted out the audio of this yesterday at Grant H. Paulson. And the first few responses were people saying, oh, he'd be super expensive. You mean the best defensive player on the planet? He'd be expensive?
That guy?
You mean the guy that's replaced Aaron Donald as the most likely player to win defensive player of the year each of the next couple of seasons?
Is that who you're referring to?
The only guy that T.J. Watt looks up at defensively in the National Football League right now, Max Crosby. That's who's going to be expensive? Oh, weird. I thought buying a brand new Corvette would be cheap. No kidding, it's expensive. And if you can trade for him, the answer is yes, you should trade for him. But I do think there's a different topic to be done based on that answer, Danny, which is he thinks they should swing for the fences.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks they should take this opportunity while they are good and the division is not that good, while they seem to be good and the conference is there to be had, to try to push some chips in and actually go accomplish something this year. Philosophy of why wait? You just don't know what next year is going to hold. You don't know that it's going to be linear progress where you're better next year and after a big spending offseason with a new draft class that the locker room's going to be the same or that Daniels is going to not have a sophomore regression or be healthy or whatever it is. And his point is, why wait? Go for it. And I want to know if people believe in that theory or not, that they should be swinging bigger since they are now 5-2. Potentially, you're 6-2 going into the week where you're making your deadline decisions. And you're taking on and beating pretty much all comers but the Ravens since week one. And you're dominating the bad teams. Should we be talking about this team trying to be more aggressive and not just waiting and sticking to the plan that they are way ahead of? Let's get into that next on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
Look, I keep trumpeting this, and I think the Raiders fans are going to be agitated with me, but I know Dan Quinn. I know Dan Quinn loves legit pass rushers. I'm talking game-breaking pass rushers. You know where I'm going with this. To ever see a guy like Max Crosby pushing that to continue to build, because you know they have a little bit of age on that pass rushing side too. I think that would be an ideal fit. Now, I know everyone in Detroit wants him there, and I think there are people in Atlanta that want him here. But I think the mix, Max Crosby and Dan Quinn, you don't think your city would go nuts over that?
That is a former general manager, Thomas Dimitroff. And he's not just any former GM. He's the GM who worked with Dan Quinn in Atlanta for years, suggesting if he was running the show with his former buddy Quinn and his former colleague in New England, Adam Peters, that he would be advocating trying to go get Max Crosby, who would be the biggest, best player traded at the deadline. It would take a ton of money. It would take a lot of draft capital. And you would be adding the defensive player of the year, hopefully, over the next couple of seasons, and one of the best players in football. We're not talking about Max Crosby specifically, necessarily, here, because I think that's a quick conversation for me. Should they trade for him? Yep. What's
sure.
next?
Yeah. It takes two to tango, though. I can't imagine the Raiders being like, sure.
They should trade him. They're terrible.
They are bad.
I mean, they would be stupid not to. But I'll give you picks. I'll give you early round picks, plural. I'll pay him the close to $30 million next couple of years. Excellent players need to be paid. Mm-hmm. And he is a top five player in the NFL. But I digress. The fun topic for you guys on the phones, I think, at 800-636-1067 right now is, the theme there is be aggressive. I want to play this clip from him in the same interview when he talked about the fact that, yeah, they have this plan and that they're trying to be patient and there's no real urgency to win this year. You got a rookie quarterback. He's not going to get paid for the next four seasons after this. You wait. You got all the money. You got all the picks this offseason. Let's just see what happens next year. He does not subscribe to that. And he talked about the fact that the NFL is a league where everything changes very quickly all the time, and it's hard to predict year to year. This is what he said when I basically said, Max Crosby, you're talking about swinging for the fences, Thomas. That's the opposite of the plan here. This is what he said.
All right, I was about ready to throw in an expletive here in the F, but I was going to say this is a not for long, you know, in parens, having long league. I mean, man, I think you capitalize again. I'm not getting out of their means, of course, not getting ahead of the skis, et cetera, et cetera. I think you really have to seriously look at it, right? You just never know. Yes, you have the quarterback, and you could sit back and be conservative about it in your own way and say, let's just see how this plays out. That's not Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn has always been on the front edge of our rosters. Whenever we talked about it, it was never about, we're good here, let's just stay here. It had always been, in all of my years with him in Atlanta, it didn't matter if it was the lower level of the practice squad all the way up, he was always looking respectfully to improve that roster. And if he had a moment and an opportunity to do such, it was a serious consideration. Now, Adam Peters might need to be the guy that keeps it in check a little bit. That's part of his job. But if there are opportunities to continue to build this football team with the momentum they have right now, again, I am for it. There are other teams out there, by the way, that I would never think about that. I think this is one that they have to seriously look at it, given their financial situation as well.
Former GM, not a donk. Not just some dude with a blog, respectfully, to dudes with blogs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree that the Commanders should be swinging big at the deadline coming up and that they're good enough and in a position where they should be? I'm going to read a tweet here from Telly. He says, in a league built on parity, progression is an illusion. The NFL is designed to allow teams to go from worst to first. Every team gets better every year, not just us. Next year's progression is not guaranteed. Go for it now, because the future is a mystery.
It's a legitimate philosophy. I think a reasonable person can go take every, you know, current factor, external factor, what's going on here with Washington, and say, your best course of action is to say, forget about future years. Go right now. You don't know when you're going to be back here. That is not a crazy course of action to me. It's not what I would take, but I get it. So to me, swing big, I want to define that further just for 1 second. To me, DeAndre Hopkins would be swinging big. For example, Kansas City just did it. Didn't cost him all that much. Cost him some cap room.
He's a big name, but I think swinging big is what you're giving up, and they gave up nothing.
And that's kind of what I mean. So if we're talking about giving up a lot, I'm not going to do that still. I would
Max Crosby.
Well, that's a different animal. I just don't think it's realistic. Now, maybe that's my hang up, but like he met another name that Dimitrov mentioned was Denzel Ward. If you ask me what I like Denzel Ward on my football team, the answer is yes.
I think tremendous. Denzel Ward's less realistic than Crosby.
But that's my point. Is like if Cleveland's like, yeah, give us a one, I'm probably not. I don't know if I'm going to do that. You know, at this stage, maybe I would, unless if there's other considerations. But to me, I want that sweet spot mid-round pick, but we'll take on salary or something for a name that up, because there's a bunch of spots where you could upgrade without getting a superstar.
But I don't want to argue, and I don't mean you and I, but on the phones, I don't want this conversation to be about like each individual tree. We're looking at the forest. And the question is, should they actively try to be aggressive and go add and supplement to this team at the expense of their cap space that they are preciously so excited about going into the offseason and the assets that they've accumulated in terms of draft picks?
Yeah, cap space I'm a lot less worried about. They got a great situation there. That's at a premium.
A situation with draft picks too.
Draft picks I'm more worried about. So again, top level draft picks, 1, 2, maybe 3. It would have to blow me away. It would have to be a Max Crosby. It'd have to be something
that's
super special.
That's my point. I mean, but you're not, when you say that, they're not giving them away for nobodies. If you give them away, they're doing it for the whatever, I don't know who comes available, but the Max Crosby, the superstar type player. The question is not, it would have to be dot, dot, dot. Yes or no, in a good trade situation with a player coming over of that ilk, would you be willing to do it? Because the idea is, at least in my mind, at the beginning of this season, my answer would have been absolutely not. And I'm just sitting here, not going full Dimitrov, but I totally think his point is correct.
Yeah, it's a valid
and
point.
Valid. What Telly's saying, I think, is correct and valid. And if you've listened to this show for the 10 years we've been doing it, I would consider myself a conservative thinker in this way. I almost called myself a conservative executive. I'm a conservative GM.
As a general manager.
As if, you know. But this is just not that. This is a different situation. Am I positive that they're going to be better right now in October of next year than they are today? How could you possibly be? Their schedule is cake the rest of the way. Their division is not very good. The conference is very mediocre. Their quarterback and their offense has not been solved. It's a juggernaut right now. Now, defensively, they are not very good. That's the part I'm trying to fix. Notice I'm not trying to go at a running back or a wide receiver or a tight end. I'm trying to add an edge rusher or a corner and shore up the bad part of this team. But imagine in 2012, when they started turning things around, let's say, if it was earlier before the deadline, and it looked like they had gotten the quarterback right and they figured this thing out for years to come, and they go, nah, we're good. We got next year. How many times have we seen that? And I know this is different. I'm acknowledging that. But when they win 5 in a row to make the playoffs in 05, we were sure in 06 it was just going to, they'd pick up where they left off. No, they didn't. In 07, they won a bunch of games in a row, made the playoffs. 08, they'll get them. No, they won't. In 2012, 7 in a row. 2013, they went 3-13. Just disasters. The progress of this sport is not linear. Year to year is way more predictable. Like how I would feel in baseball is kind of what people are applying to Washington. And I think smartly, if you're Peters, if you're Quinn, you got to have your 1, your 3, and your 5-year plan. But as a baseball GM, Grant Rizzo is going, doing exactly what Rizzo's done. I am trading everyone. I'm blowing it up. We're building from the farm system. And it's going to take me 5 years. That's how you do it in baseball. Football is a strike while the iron's hot. The Giants won a Super Bowl when they were 9-7 because they got hot. Kind of sport. So I'm not full Dimitrov, but I'm telling you, I think I would be pretty aggressive looking around at this landscape right now, seeing this division, seeing this conference, which I know he said shouldn't be factored into the equation, but knowing that next year, what's to say Jaden Daniels doesn't get hurt in the preseason? Now you've lost 2025. You just don't know that you're going to be back here at 5-2 going into week 8 with, and you will not have a schedule this easy, I promise you that. In the next couple of years. There's no chance.
No, you wouldn't think.
You're not going to have a last place schedule. You're not going to be playing a couple of teams that are any good over your final 10 games or whatever it is.
So I suppose I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth because I'm breaking my glass here. If Max Crosby's available, that name we keep mentioning because Dimitrov mentioned it, then I suppose I'm doing that. But in general, I actually subscribe to Ted Leonsis's ownership manifesto that he published years ago where you have to have an honest evaluation and look at your own team. And if you decide, as constructed, is my team capable of winning a championship? Is it a move or two away, or do I need to, you know, do the hard thing and rebuild? And I wished Wizards owner Ted Leonsis would have read that and made some decisions years ago, but whatever, I digress. I don't know that if I make one move, I'm now a championship contender. That's kind of my counter to it is, do I host a one playoff game now, or what am I making myself
with a really good player? So I asked Josh Harris about owning three different teams in three different sports before the start of the season. And he said, I'm a different owner for all three sports, basically. Mm-hmm. I'm paraphrasing. I don't think Ted Leonsis owning the Capitals can own the Nats the same way if he buys this team. And you've seen it with how little success he's had owning the basketball team.
Right.
I agree with Ted Leonsis' manifesto, whatever we're calling it, philosophy for hockey. I actually think there's a relatability, as I said, with what I would do in baseball is different than what I would do in football versus basketball. I'm not pretending to say I'd go all in or like I'm pushing all the chips to the middle. But I do think you owe it to yourself to give yourself an opportunity when you've got a quarterback playing at a top five level, a top five offense, a top five record, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like just to wait because, well, we're ahead of schedule and we'll be better next year. That's a scary way to think. You might be more talented. That does not mean better. This group, this brotherhood, whatever this shtick is.
It's all happening.
It's working. Yeah. They love each other. They play well together. Like, that matters more. I covered the 2012 defense when they won seven in a row. A bunch of dudes I never heard of. They weren't a talented defense, but it worked. They got a good thing going right now. Neither you give yourself a chance to take the best advantage of that possible or not. And it's just funny for me to be sitting here saying this because I've never really felt this way. But look around the NFL. Who's really good? Who's better than them? The Chiefs cannot lose, and there's nothing interesting about that team. There's nothing they do better than the Commanders on offense. Now, they're a much better defense, obviously. Can you fix that defense a little bit? Would be the question. 800-636-1067. We're going to get to the calls on this next. The question for you is, do you agree with Dimitroff, the former GM, former Quinn and Peters colleague, that Washington should be swinging big at this deadline? You're listening to The Fan. If you missed Thomas Dimitroff on the show yesterday, you really should podcast the whole thing tonight when we're done, thefandc.com. He was tremendous, former GM. We asked him what he would do ahead of the deadline if he was Washington. He said they should be trying to trade for Max Crosby. And that shocked us. It took us aback because we have not been thinking about like fishing in those ponds where the big fish are. And I said as much to him. I said, that's not really the plan. That's not what they are by any evidence that we have thinking about trying to do. And his point was, not for long, man. You've got an opportunity. You've got to seize it. Do you buy that thinking, or are you willing to sit back, be more conservative, wait, and see what happens the rest of this year, and then make a little bit more of a push this offseason? As a reminder, we'll be in Manassas on Friday at Uptown Alley for our second stop in our Friday field trip. So please come out tomorrow to Uptown Alley in Manassas for a live show from 2 to 6:30.
This is going to be fun. The first one we did last week at Spanky's in Leesburg was, quite frankly, a 10. Like, Billy Bob gave it a 10. Ms. Davis, 10. Then he asked her to prom. We pretty much asked Spanky's to prom last week. Manassas.
Can we use 111? If we can use 111 for the whole season, I'm going to use the 11 on Spanky's until someone unseeds Spanky's, and I don't see that happening.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
Like, that was better than a 10.
So that was it. So right now, that's an 11 out of 10 until someone supersedes it.
Yeah.
So, Manassas, challenge you to a duel, Doc Holliday style. Let's go.
Give us your best shot. 2 to 6:30 tomorrow. To the phones we go. AJ's in Bethesda on Grant and Danny. AJ, what do you make of being ultra-aggressive and trying to go big here at the deadline?
From Bethesda!
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Amen.
So, I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, I I remember the team of 2012, and again, I don't think it's an apples-to-apples comparison because I think this team's far better. You're sitting at 5-2 right now, and you've got a real shot to make a hard move. They've got the cap space. I think it would only make sense, though, number one, if you could find a guy at a position of need, a pass rusher or a shutdown corner, and then I trust in Adam Peters that he's going to get the best deal and get the deal done for the best he can for the organization. But you've got to go all in because, again, you're one major injury away from going backwards substantially. Who's your quarterback if Jaden were to go down substantially? We know the answer, and that's not going to get us all that far. So
it's a great point. I would add just a little color to that. I'm not making any trades that are rentals, to be clear. This is not about winning in 2024. That is a side effect to what I am trying to accomplish. Mm. It might even be a co-priority, but Max Crosby or anybody else that I trade for, these A-listers that I'm willing to give up picks and money for, corner, defensive end, it is at a premium position of need where, and this is the most important part, they will then help me address the issue going into next season and beyond. I don't have to go get a defensive end with my first round pick or with a ton of salary because I just added Crosby. I'm just using him, even though that's not that likely because that's Dimitroff's guy. But if it's Denzel Ward at corner or Newsom at corner or whatever, I'm bringing in my answer. That's who I would have signed in free agency. Now I've got less money, but I've got my picks. I've got my free agency money that I'll still have top half the league money because right now I'm number two. That I can go address other areas. Shane's in D.C. on Grant and Danny. What's up, Shane?
Hey, Shane.
Commander Grant, great topic. Hey, guys, how you guys doing today?
Buddy.
Hey, look, here's the thing. Absolutely, you swing for the fences. You put all your chips in right now. Right now, that's what we need right now. Defense right now in the NFL, regardless whatever level, wins championships. And we need a pass rusher. We need a corner. We need an outside linebacker. This right here, and like you said, Grant, we don't want a rental for this year. I want somebody we can bring in this locker room and also be a teacher for this the next generation coming up. Look, we got a good taste in our mouth. For years, we've had this sour taste that we were just average. I think now we got the right ownership and the right management in this organization to now change the culture. That's the key word, culture. We got a better culture right now. We got better coaches. Look at Ron Rivera's draft classes. None of these guys are even on this team anymore. Davis is gone. I'm like, this is where we're at. We need a defense. It just shows you right now, your offense is struggling. Not offense, but University of Tennessee, for example. The offense is struggling, but that defense is the elite defense of the country. Defense wins, and we do need a pass rusher. I'll be calling Cleveland Browns right now because you know they're going to sell everything right now.
They're my first call.
Miles Garrett, everything.
Shane, thank you as always, buddy. A thought. I'm not calling anybody out specifically. This is just a thought. There's a lot of – we haven't been here for the last however many decades – feeling that's coming through in these calls about going for it right now, as if to say, we know it's going to end, we hurry up, we have to get this in before the party's over. I wonder if the same folks that are saying go all in, were you the same folks that were saying you were yelling at me, rightly so, by the way, that we should trust Adam Peters, that we should trust this regime, trust this staff, trust this group of people to be able to actually build something sustainable. If you've got a really good GM, you're not going to accidentally be 5-2 again. You got a great chance of having this thing work out because he's smart. He knows what he's doing. And I know you're here. You're in a good place. But I feel like there's maybe this little bit of a feeling of we better do it now because we know something terrible is coming. And maybe something terrible isn't coming.
I disagree with that, actually. There might be someone that thinks that way. Totally. I'm not saying there isn't.
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. I don't think it's that. I'm one of the people you're talking to. I do trust Adam Peters. I think he'll make a good trade for whoever he makes a trade for. I think it's really hard to be 5-2. If you do everything correctly, and he'll do things correctly most of the time, but it's an imperfect job, you're going to miss plenty. Your average draft class is going to be a 50-50 proposition if you do well. It's hard to be 5-2. It's harder to be 5-2. Normally when you're 5-2, you're 5-2 and you're in a division where the Packers are awesome and the Lions are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a conference where you can't win because Aaron Rodgers in the prime of his career or some other quarterback gives you no chance. None of that stands in your way right now. None of it. The division is not very good. The conference, there's fine teams, but Jared Goff's going to keep you. You can't possibly win the Super Bowl because Brock Purdy and the ghost of a bunch of guys who are hurt are going to keep you from winning, it's right there for you. And I just think it's hard to get to the point that they're at now. And the notion that because it's year one, you'll just get to be there again in year two or year three, I disagree with. Ask Orioles fans, going back to last year, the first of their two postseason runs now, should they have been more aggressive? And I'm a big Mike Elias guy. I think he's one of the smartest executives and GMs that there are. Their philosophy, and it works more in baseball, was we're going to be here for 7 or 8 years with bites at the apple. We don't need to trade our kids to go get an arm. Well, you got bounced in a 3-game series by the Rangers. That's okay. You come in as the favorites in the American League East this year. They weren't nearly as good. What happened? Adley Rutschman didn't have a good year. Basically, 2 or 3 of the kids regressed. Some of the guys you call up, like Jackson Holliday and Colby Mayo, aren't who you thought they were. And next thing you know, you don't even win the division. And then you get bounced as soon as you get into the wild card round. Now you're going into year 3 of being good and year 7 of your build or whatever. Like, when you have an opportunity, I think you got to take it pretty seriously. 800-636-1067 is the number. Should the Commanders be considering being aggressors at the deadline and maybe changing the plan a little bit? G&D on the fan.